check record checkbox.
Well, hi there, everyone. My name is Matt, and I want to welcome you to my very first podcast on Blind Cool Tech. We appreciate you listening. Thanks for your support. And this is going to kind of be just an introductory sort of informational podcast. And before I begin with that podcast, I do want to give you my contact information. I encourage and welcome your comments and questions and so on. I'm going to have to spell this email address for you. I'll say it first. It's mjvolbrecht@embarkmail.com. Now let me spell that. It's M as in Matthew, J, Volbrecht, V as in Victor, O-L-L, B as in Barbara, R-E-C-H-T as in Thomas. So that's M.J. Volbrecht at embarkmail. Now we got another one. Embark is spelled E-M-B-A-R-Q, and then the word mail, M-A-I-L.com. M.J. Volbrecht at embarkmail.com. And after you hear this podcast, maybe you'll have some questions or that sort of thing, and I hope you'll email them to me. I'll give you that email address again before the end of the show. And what we're actually going to do, hopefully, in the second podcast, what I'd like to do is do sort of a Q&A podcast and answer some of the questions that you have asked, to the best of my ability anyways, and then we'll move on to some other things in future podcasts, and we'll do those periodically, those Q&A ones. But I work for the Department of Education in my state in the field of assistive technology. I do a lot of product research and recommendations and training and so on. So we'll be doing some tutorial and demonstration podcasts, some review podcasts, and as far as what you can expect from me, many, although certainly not all, but many of these podcasts will actually be about Apple-related products, because I actually happen to be a huge fan of Apple and very excited about what they've done already for accessibility and what they're going to continue doing. And this podcast, specifically today, will kind of be devoted to that very thing, making you aware, in case you're not, of some of the things that Apple has done, and also we'll spend a little bit of time specifically on their latest accessibility innovation, the iPhone. I actually am totally blind. I have been since the age of 3. I'm now 26. My wife and son are both sighted, and I did an article recently on my transition from the PC to the Mac. I was raised on the PC. I started using it when it was just DOS, and then Windows 3.1. About 12 years ago, started using Windows 95, and I've used every version of Windows since then, with the exception of betas and some of the NTs and so on, but 95, 98, so the second edition, Windows Millennium, you know, ME, 2000, XP, several flavors and service packs, and Vista, several flavors and service pack 1, all that. So I've been very familiar with Microsoft products, used just about every screen reader known to man here in the U.S. Anyways, and truthfully, you know, I've had the experience that I'd say probably most Windows users have had. I hope I don't offend anyone today. I'm going to try not to, although chances are I will before the end of this, and I apologize. But, you know, we're all entitled to our opinions, and this is just mine. Anyhow, I've had, you know, kind of an up-and-down, hit-or-miss relationship with the PC. You know, you get by, but you have the issues that you always have. And I did an article about that very thing and why I switched to the Mac. I'll be happy to send it to you if you're interested. Just email me. I'll send you a link to it, or send the article itself if necessary. But the you know, not going to spend too much time on that subject right now. But suffice it to say, I've been using the Mac for not even a year yet. Actually, I switched in February. Well, really March of this year, and I've loved absolutely every second of it. As a matter of fact, I'm doing this recording now. For those of you who are curious about that, I'm doing this recording on a MacBook. And I'm doing it in GarageBand. I guess it's 5, I forget, whatever the latest one is in iLife 9. Using Leopard, which is the OS, of course, the Mac OS, 10.5.8. I'm just about to switch to Snow Leopard here, and that'll be a whole other podcast for a whole different time, and we'll talk about that. But anyways, the The MacBook is a 13-inch aluminum MacBook, really what's now the MacBook Pro, but this was when they were just calling it a MacBook. Essentially the same unit. We also have a 20-inch iMac, which I do believe is still being manufactured in the very same configuration we got it. So it was just a few months ago. And as far as the benefits to the Mac, they're discussed in that article as well. We won't get too deeply into them today. Obviously, some of the things, you know, fewer and really no issues of crashing, freezing, errors, viruses, spyware, maintenance, defragmentation, the list just goes on and on and on. Not to mention the hardware being made by the same company as the software just really revolutionizes the way that the computer works. And there is, in case you're not aware, and if you are, I want to still comment on it a little, the built-in screen reader in every single Mac, which is called VoiceOver. VoiceOver is part of the Universal Access Panel with all kinds of accessibility features. I do not get 1 cent from Apple. I don't work for them. I don't get any kind of, you know, kickback. It's just my personal opinion and my personal feelings. And VoiceOver is extremely different from Microsoft's Narrator, which is their built-in screen, although it's really not even, shouldn't even be classified as a screen reader, truthfully, in my opinion. And by Microsoft's own admission, it is not designed to be a screen reader. It's designed for basic setup and troubleshooting. VoiceOver is a fully functioning, robust, powerful screen reader that has all the features that any good screen reader should, and actually a few more. And the very first thing you'll notice about that is it's leveled the playing field. Now everybody that gets a computer has that option. You don't have to be spending extra money on a separate screen reader or anything like that. So no matter what, you have access anywhere. And that's a very important thing, I think. As far as how well it works, well, I'll tell you what, it works excellent as far as I'm concerned. The keyboard command set is easy to learn, although it is different, and I always advise people don't try to compare, just learn it for what it is. It's not really harder, I don't think, it's just different. And so, you know, you will need to do that, and actually there will be even some new options in the Snow Leopard version of VoiceOver, but even as it is now, it's wonderful, and it works with all of the built-in Mac OS apps and menus and dialogues and, you know, with the Safari web browser, the Mac OS X Mail email client, iTunes, it works with TextEdit, you know, the basic word processor, which actually is not so basic, truthfully, it's pretty extensive, and the upgrades in Snow Leopard are very impressive to it also. Works with Preview, which is the PDF reader on the Mac. Works with the calculator, the Front Row application for watching movies and playing DVDs. It works with QuickTime Player. It works with all of the iLife stuff, which is the iMovie, iWeb, you know, GarageBand, iDVD. Now, granted, some of these, iPhoto, some of them you're going to be limited by, you know, the fact that you're not going to actually see what, you know, if it's iPhoto, well, you're not going to see the pictures, so that's not, you know, an issue of accessibility, it's just what it is. But the program itself is usable, and what else? Anything that comes on the Mac, it's fully accessible with. Let's just say it that way. We could name a bunch of others, but it doesn't matter because it's everything that comes on the Mac. There, you know, one or two programs might not be perfect, and you'll find that with Windows screen readers, of course, too. But they're improving upon that anyhow. DVD player, they don't really recommend with VoiceOver. They recommend Front Row instead, and that's fine. iCal, the calendar, the address book, all of that stuff, fully accessible. iWork, which is the optional productivity suite from Apple, $79 preload. It includes three programs: Pages, the word processor; Numbers, the spreadsheet program; and Keynote, the multimedia presentation program. And they're all accessible. Pages is completely accessible. Numbers and Keynote are sort of accessible, but they're works in progress by Apple's own statement, and they're going to only get better as time goes on. I do spreadsheets in Numbers now. Granted, it's a little bit tricky at times. Not tricky, but just takes longer than it would if I used something else. They do support OpenOffice, so I could use that. But Numbers does the job, and it will continue to get better as far as accessibility goes. And there's, you know, in VoiceOver, there is mouse simulation, there's pronunciation manager, there's verbosity, there's anything that you would expect from a terrific screen reader. And there's going to be a lot of new features in Snow Leopard, which we'll talk about later. We chose the Mac, I got the MacBook, and then we chose the iMac. We did have PC peripherals that were decent, so we could have cut down on cost if we had gotten a Mac Mini. But I didn't go that route because I really wanted an all-in-one solution, and the iMac is just amazing. We have a wireless network set up with our wireless router, so we don't even have to connect that to the iMac because it has Wi-Fi in it, and although you could use Ethernet, it's got the whole gamut of ports, but we use Wi-Fi. We have a wireless mouse from Apple. Don't need any speakers because the audio is integrated. Don't need any separate display because the display is integrated. Power cord, of course. And our printer is Wi-Fi, which we got from Apple. It's a Canon, and so that actually is not an issue either. It's an all-in-one. You know, that's connected to power, but not to the computer physically. And the only other thing that is connected to the computer besides power is the keyboard, because we did opt for the USB keyboard rather than the wireless one. My wife is a math teacher, and she likes having the numeric keypad, which is only offered on one of the wired USB models. And you get two extra USB ports with the wireless or with the wired keyboard. And so I thought we'd go ahead and do that, which gives us I think six USB ports. Not that we'd even need them, but it's just nice having that even closer access. You know, if you want to plug in pen drives, other external devices like that. So that's why we chose the systems that we did, and you can read my article. Later on, we'll do some Mac tutorials. Now, Mike Arrigo, who I have not ever met personally, but I've corresponded with on a number of occasions, has done some absolutely excellent tutorial demos on the Mac. As a matter of fact, I think he's got close to 10 up there now, with more on the way, I think. And I would never, ever want to steer anybody away from them because they're great and they've helped a number of people, myself included. But I have to do podcasts for my work anyways, and one of the things I'm introducing the Department of Ed to is the Mac. So I'll probably be doing some Mac tutorials, and I'll post them here. His are excellent. Hopefully you'll think mine are too. Not that one's going to be better, good, bad, just different. Everybody's different, and so, you know, we'll put some up with my style of teaching, and that's fine. And I'm sure that, I feel I can safely and comfortably say that Mike would understand that too. It's definitely not in any way any kind of competition when I do that, but know that they will probably be up there as time goes on. The other thing we're going to do is some demos and tutorials of some of Apple's other products, which is what I want to talk about now. I am very, very excited about what Apple's done. I had been looking for a PDA for years and just not able to find one that really, truly is what I wanted. First of all, they're so expensive. I was happy with a Parrot VoiceMate, which I still actually have, although I don't use it much now because of the iPhone. But I had I'm very tough on products. When I give reviews, I don't give a good review unless I really think it's deserved. And truthfully, I looked at a lot of PDAs that are accessible, designed for, people with visual impairments. And they just, man, first of all, they're so expensive. You know, a PackMate is between $2,500 and $3,000, depending on what you get. Probably give or take a little. And it doesn't even have built-in Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or SD support, which you need SD support if you're going to use large memory, because there's not that much flash memory in the thing. It does have CF support, compact flash support, but still. Braille Note is another option, but it's pretty pricey too, and kind of proprietary. The icon from Level Star had my attention for a little bit, but I just decided to see what else might come along. And I don't even know if people realize exactly what Apple has done, because they've done something absolutely amazing. First of all, they have created what is truly the world's very first mainstream accessible PDA. PacMate claims to be mainstream because, well, we use Windows Mobile, but guess what? It's still not mainstream. A sighted user would not buy a PacMate. First of all, it's way too expensive, and secondly, it doesn't have a screen, which a lot of sighted users would want. Also, it is going to have, you know, JAWS, so you're going to have to learn that. It just is not what I would consider to be acceptable as a truly mainstream product. Apple's iPhone, on the other hand, is. And in my opinion, it's the best smartphone and PDA in existence anyways. Now, the iPhone has... Apple has done something else by creating this device. In addition to having the first mainstream, PDA type of device. The other thing that they've done... And again, I just am so amazed by this. They have taken an age-old theory... All right. When I first heard about the iPhone, I thought it was excellent.
It's 12 o'clock.
And my wife and I got an iPod Touch for her to use. We have a first gen. Actually, now we have a second generation one. But, of course, it doesn't have speech. And I always said, well, you know, how would they put speech on that? It's a touch screen. You know, I'm not going to be able to use a touch screen. Blind people can't use a touch screen, right? Wrong. Unless you have coordination, dexterity issues, which can happen in sighted people too, there's absolutely no reason that we can't use a touchscreen. And so they've taken that theory, at least the theory that I had, I'll speak for myself, and completely shattered it, just turned it upside down and shattered it. By the way that they have created special gestures for use with VoiceOver, their screen reader. It's amazing, and it works. So what is this device capable of doing? And how is it going to benefit you? First of all, of course, it is available in two different size configurations, a 16-gig flash memory drive and a 32-gig one. I did opt for the 32 one. Also, it's going to have two color choices in either capacity, white or black, and again, that may or may not matter to you. I did get the white one. Now, of course, it's got a phone. The phone here in the U.S. is only sold, you must have an AT&T plan, and it must be active for the iPhone to really be usable at all in any way. If for one reason or another you can't or won't get AT&T, Apple does sell these unlocked in Australia, and there are a couple companies here in the U.S., such as Mobile City, which I think is mobilecityonline.com, that you can purchase an unlocked iPhone, and it's imported, so it's going to be a bit expensive. Plus, there's no carrier subsidy. You know, you don't have a contract, so it's going to be more expensive that way, too. But it is factory unlocked. Don't go with a software unlocked one. I'm not really sure that that's legal anyways, but also it's going to give you problems if you try to upgrade its firmware or software or do a factory restore in the unlikely event you'd ever need to. And it just is going to, you know, relock the device. A factory unlocked one won't. It's designed by Apple unlocked, and it requires no cell phone contract, no SIM card. You have to put a SIM card in it once when you first get it, one time and one time only. Apple recommends AT&T, but I think it could be any. And you pop it in there, you get one from a friend, or if you do have a GSM service, you pop your own in there. It unlocks, you take it out, and that's good to go. Literally took us like a minute and a half to 2 minutes to do the whole process once we figured out where the SIM card even goes in and out. But, you know, that was easy to figure out from reading a little bit. And the thing is never locked then, and that's it. The device will work without a SIM card then for PDA, iPod, and Wi-Fi internet and email features. And if you choose to, you can get a cell phone plan, but you wouldn't be bound by what AT&T requires. So you'd be bound by the terms of service for whatever you get. But in other words, you know, you'd be able to choose a little more freely. You can get T-Mobile. You would not be able to get Verizon or Sprint because they don't use those GSM technology at all. So that would not work, but the other ones would. And basically, it's T-Mobile, AT&T, and some of the regional providers. But you could get a prepaid, which you can't get with the U.S. sold iPhone. It's got to be a, you know, postpaid, basically contract. Well, you don't require a contract, but you know, it's basically their standard plans. So those are some options there. It is a full-featured phone, you know, with a keypad that appears on the screen, and it is accessible. We'll tell you how that works in a couple minutes. A voicemail button, which is configurable. If you don't get the locked, you know, if you get an unlocked one, pop in a T-Mobile SIM card. It will do T-Mobile voicemail. The U.S. sold ones will do AT&T's visual voicemail, which is accessible. It has, you know, recents for recent calls, favorites, and it even has a, you know, a contacts one, which is like your phone book, and it uses the contacts on the iPhone, which we'll talk about here in a couple minutes. So, full-featured phone, text messaging, which actually has its own app, and, of course, it's accessible. What else does the device have? Well, it's got an iPod. The iPod gives you the ability to play music in many file types. You can sync music from your computer that you already have on your computer in MP3s from wherever you got them or from regular CDs that you import into your iTunes library on a Mac or on a PC and put that on the iPod or on this particular device, the iPhone and the iPod Touch. You can actually buy music from the iTunes store right on the device with Wi-Fi. The one of the greatest things about an iPhone and an iPod is its ability to be docked. Docking, there's a little connector at the bottom of the iPod, iPhone, and you simply place that so you're sitting the iPhone on top of one of many devices out there that supports docking. And there are tons of them, and the, you know, these things can be different kinds of speakers. We have several notable ones. One is a JBL on stage, on tour. I think ours is on stage. That's a pretty much stationary one. But then we also have an iHome on the go. It's like a hard shell protective case with two speakers, and it docks and is portable, battery operated, and also has a 3.5 millimeter, you know, eighth inch jack if you have an MP3 player that's not capable of docking, like an iPod Shuffle or a ZenStone or, you know, a SanDisk, whatever those are, or any others. You know, there are many that are available. The other one of my favorite docks that we have is a Logitech Purify Anywhere. Ours is the Anywhere 2, I think. It's got a lithium ion battery, and when you plug it in, then it charges the iPod or iPhone also. So that's a nice benefit, and it's nice sound for that. It's still considered portable, but it's also got really, really robust, good sound. I mean, that could be your stereo system, which is basically what we've done. You know, we use that for everything. And the iPod, even, we have a vehicle iPod jack, which was installed for us. It uses the headphone jack. We don't use one of the wireless car iPod players because they don't work as well as these FM modulated, you know, ones that are installed in the dash. But so we do that. We have a car charger, but, you know, anyways. So that's our whole music collection. Not only music, but also podcasts, audiobooks, TV shows, music videos, movies, and tons of other things on this, you know, with the iPod feature. Also, there is a camera. It's 3 megapixel with flash, and there is a camcorder. You can take video and then with just a tap or two, instantly share with YouTube and other places or share your photos. You can view photos on this thing, share photos, edit video right on the iPhone, and it all, I mean, when Apple does something, they do it well, and the video and camera features are no exception. The next thing it has, let's see, it's got all of your PDA features, a calendar, which works great, multiple entries, individual appointments, recurring, you know, anniversary type appointments, multiple notifications, alerts, alarms, email alarms, email invitations, about anything you can think of. The contacts work with the phone app and just as a standalone contacts app as well. Tons and tons of fields that you can show or hide on a per entry basis. So you got, you know, home, work, home phone, work phone, cell phone 2, pager, other, work fax, work address, email, home, email, work, assistant, friend. I mean, there's just tons of them. It's a really great design. And we're going to talk about how you can sync them with your computer here in a couple of minutes, too. But next is the, you have a calculator, a clock with a world clock, alarm, stopwatch, and timer. You have another device does have to be on or at least in sleep mode for the alarm to work, just so you know that. What else? I know there's more that I'm missing here still. Oh, yeah. I don't know how I'm forgetting this. The internet stuff, Safari and mail, email and web browsing. Safari is your, you know, full HTML web browser. There's no need for special mobile versions. Anything HTML will, and it will work via 3G from your cell phone if you have a data plan, which here in the U.S. is required if you get AT&T. Or the other way that it works is via Wi-Fi, which is how I use it. We have, you know, Wi-Fi here at home. A lot of other places you'd go, friends' houses, McDonald's, other restaurants and coffee shops, even hospitals and airports have it, hotels, offices, schools. And it remembers the location, it remembers the network, and it works very well with all kinds of networks, you know, encrypted, open, password, whatever they may be, it will work with them. There is a YouTube app, so you can instantly watch, you know, even though you could do that in Safari also. There's a YouTube feature, it takes you right there. You can search for any video, watch one of their, just like visiting YouTube regularly. You know, there's no restrictions there whatsoever. There's notes, you can enter text notes, and there's also voice memos, and you can record spoken memos, and there is a built-in microphone. There's a built-in speaker, too, of course, but built-in microphone, and you can then sync this with your computer, and I think it comes in the Wave format, one of the popular formats anyways, so it's not a proprietary thing that you can't do anything with then, you know. And you could use an external microphone if you really wanted to. Apple has designed a really neat, revolutionary audio jack. It's one jack that serves for earphone, headphone, and microphone. I don't know how they've done this, but they have designed the software in such a way to control it, depending on what you're doing. And with the iPhone, you get a set of earbuds with a microphone. You can buy those for your iPod Nano 4th generation that talks too if you wanted to, or your iPod Touch 2nd generation which does not talk, but I have reason to suspect that there will be a 3rd gen one that will talk very soon, but nevertheless the options are quite extensive. There are other apps that we have on the iPod, some on the iPhone, some of which were free, some of which I paid for, most of which are accessible, a couple are not, but that's a work in progress, too, I'm sure. You know, we have the Kindle app, which from Amazon Kindle. You can read books right on there. We have the, let's see, I've got, well, we've got XM Online. We have an XM subscription. So if you have Sirius XM, this is, you know, you can dock this and listen to it anywhere, take it with you, whatever. As long as there, now that one will not work over 3G. 3G, of course, gives you internet access anywhere. It's just like having mobile broadband. But some apps are limited for various reasons, and one of them is the XM one. I think that one does require a Wi-Fi connection. No big deal. Because if you got XM, chances are you have a car one anyways, so you only need it when you're not in your car. And there is an app that I got for, it's kind of a component to a desktop version of a program I have called Mac Gourmet, which, by the way, is accessible. It's recipe software, fully accessible with VoiceOver on the Mac and on the iPhone. I'm doing things I've never been able to do with a PC. With the Mac, I even have 2009 World Book Multimedia Encyclopedia, and it's accessible on the Mac. Anyways, this Mac Gourmet iPhone component allows me to do shopping lists based on my recipes and so on. Also along that same line, we have Grocery Gadget, which is a shopping list program. Make weekly lists, you know, individual lists, get the store layout and have the groceries on the list organized that way, cross things off, put them in a basket, you know, list for later. And it's got thousands of already existing products, which I'm sure are updated regularly, but you can also create your own as well. But I mean, seriously, any brand of thing, you just look through the list one time, it's amazing. Urban Spoon is a restaurant locator, that's accessible also. Fandango, accessible, it's a movie info kind of program. You can find out about movies, watch trailers, and perhaps even more cool than that is you can find out what theaters near you are playing the movies and when. Band is a program that lets you create music based on like on-screen keyboards and stuff like that. We have Repeller, which is a mosquito repeller, Sonic, and iLava, which is not fully, well, it's as accessible as it can be. You don't get the visual perspective, but it's a lava lamp, and it makes sounds which are relaxing, and you can shake and turn the and tilt the iPhone and get different colors and that sort of thing. My wife likes it. I think my son will like it. I forgot to show it to him, but we have a Bible app, which is accessible. You can read the Bible, search for passages, do all kinds of lookups. And we have let me see what else. I'm trying to do this by memory. I don't have the thing on yet in front of me. I should do that, but we've tested a couple Wi-Fi phone calling and instant messaging sort of programs, and I don't know. iCall is my favorite, although it's not accessible, so that kind of is a moot point for me. But it allows you to make calls over Wi-Fi using your existing contacts and that sort of thing. I think there may be a monthly small fee, but then the calls are unlimited, and you can transfer mobile calls to Wi-Fi using iCall. I've also tried Fring and Nimbuzz, and there's just little quirks about them that I don't like. But if you had an AOL Instant Messenger account or Yahoo, or even I think some of the Windows ones, you know, those programs would be good, and they will work with Skype and things like that. So, you know, you do have options there. Another app I have is the iDisk app, which I'm going to talk about in a couple minutes because of Mobile Me. But before we do that, let me just think if I'm missing any other apps. I probably am. StepTrack Lite, it's a pedometer. And there may be others. And if there are, I'll just share them later with you when we actually look at the iPhone in Podcast 2. Well, actually, Podcast 2 is going to be our Q&A podcast, but in Podcast 3, we'll look at the device and play with it. So you can get tons of apps. I mean, there are, I think Apple says 65,000 apps out there right now, and I'm sure there are more on the way. And, you know, as the Apple commercials say, there's an app for just about anything. Now, I want to talk briefly about Mobile Me, because this takes the iPhone experience to a whole new level. And then we're going to close for today with that. I did want to mention another Apple product that's really cool. It's not really accessible, though, but it's called Apple TV. I might talk about that before we close, but we'll see. I really want to cover this Mobile Me thing. I got Mobile Me as soon as I got a MacBook, and then once I got two computers, it made even more sense, and then even more so now with the iPhone and with iPod touches, anything that's got Wi-Fi. Basically, it's a $99 a year subscription that is well worth it. It's money well spent, in my opinion. What does it do? First of all, automatic synchronization over Wi-Fi. Right then and there, for most people, you should be sold. Because if you have a Mac with iCal, every Mac has iCal, every Mac has address book, every Mac has mail, the OS X mail, or if you have a PC with Microsoft Outlook. I think you can do it with Outlook on the Mac too, but in my opinion, you don't even need Outlook on the Mac, especially now that Snow Leopard, their new operating system, is going to have built-in Exchange server support, which is something even Windows can't really say. This is amazing, and so either platform, when you enter information, let's say a calendar appointment or a contact on the Mac or the PC or the iPod or iPhone, it instantly becomes available on the rest of your devices. So if I am traveling and I'm meeting someone and then they say to me, let's get together next week and have lunch. What day's good for you? I can schedule that appointment on my iPhone. And if the place I'm at has Wi-Fi, it's done instantly. If not, the next time I get to a Wi-Fi place, then that information is automatically synchronized with my Mac computer. Or PC, if you have a PC. Just like that, it's done. And vice versa, you can enter information on the computer and it's instantly synchronized with your iPhone or iPod Touch. So that in and of itself is great, and it works with email messages also. You get email in all of your locations. It works with contacts, calendar appointments, it works with events. It works with the Safari bookmarks, you know, for your web browsing and that sort of thing as well. You can even set it up for settings and preferences, too. The next thing that it gives you is an email address and personal web space. It also gives you online file storage. The online file storage is called iDisk, and Mac computers have an icon for the iDisk right on your desktop if you set them up that way, and everything is instantly available on all computers if you save a document or a song or anything in the iDisk. But also there's a free app for the iPhone and iPod Touch that lets you access your documents from iDisk on that device as well. And it reads PDFs, it reads Apple iWork documents, it reads Microsoft Office documents, and it reads several other formats too, like rich text and things like that. The iDisk also has a public folder so that even if you don't have your computer or mobile device with you, you can still access your files in a password-protected public folder via URL. Another thing that you get as a benefit of MobileMe is iWork.com. iWork, again, is Mac's, Apple's productivity suite. It's compatible with MS Office if you need to read or edit or save in, you know, those formats. But when you create a document in iWork, you can share it and you enter an email address or multiple email addresses of the recipients that you want to view your document. They instantly receive an invitation with a link to your document that you've uploaded, and they look at the document, they can see it online, they can read it online, they can comment on it online, or they can download it in the Apple iWork format, the Microsoft Office equivalent, or PDF. And you can then, right within iWork, you can sign in and view your shared documents, see if comments have been left. You can add new recipients. You can delete your document. It expires automatically, I think, after 120 days. To save space. You get a gig of space for that kind of stuff. You get 10 gigs for online file storage, but a gig for iWork.com. And so, again, this is just, it just takes the experience to a whole new level, and it really works tremendously well. I am going to share with you two other quick points here, and we're going to close. The first point is, if you already have an iPhone, you may be wanting to hear just a nice quick summary of some of the most important ways to navigate, because and even if you don't, you might say, well, how can you navigate a touchscreen? You said you could, but you didn't tell us how. Well, here's how. The touchscreen gestures change when VoiceOver is turned on, and you turn VoiceOver on either from the control panel of the iPhone, the settings pane, under Universal Access, or you can do it from the computer when you synchronize it, so that even is fully accessible. VoiceOver uses, when you tap an icon on the touchscreen, it reads what that icon is, but it has no effect on the device itself. So if you tap where the, let's say, calendar is, it'll say calendar, and then it'll say double tap to open. If you do a quick tap, then it activates the item. And that works for text input as well, and anything else, phone number dialing. So it does not require you to, you know, learn by making mistakes and have to constantly go back and delete and stuff like that. You feel your way around by tapping. As you get more and more used to it, you'll know approximately where icons are. Like, I know that the phone, mail, Safari, and iPod are always at the bottom. And I know that on the top is the status bar with my cell carrier, signal strength, the time, date and time, and the Wi-Fi status, and the battery power remaining. So those are always on top. Everything else is kind of in the middle, and I'm kind of used to where they appear on my screen. But if I'm not used to something, I start tapping, and then I swipe to the right or swipe to the left, and I go through everything that's on my screen. I can also swipe up and down in some cases, especially for pickers, like setting the time and stuff like that. You can swipe up and down to move within a control. There is a three-fingered scroll. This is especially useful like in settings or menus or your contacts, you know, where you might have a lot that doesn't fit on one page. Three fingers up, swipe up, takes you to the next page. Down, takes you back to the previous page. There is a two-fingered double tap, which is really a time saver more than anything else, and you'll find it very useful. It always is a substitute for another way of doing things, but you may like it, and I'll give you a couple of examples of where it works. Number one, the iPod. There are many ways to initiate the playing of music on your iPhone. For one thing, you can double tap the iPod icon and then find what you want, either search for a song, go into music, go into videos, go into podcasts, whatever, and then scroll with your three-fingered scroll until you get to what you want, and then double tap the song or the movie or whatever, and that's fine. Another way you can do it is via voice control. There's a tactile button on the bottom, which is your home button also. It always returns you to your home screen. But also, if you press and hold it, it will activate voice control. You can say, call John Smith. You can say, call 555, whatever. Or you can say, play album and the name of your album. Or play playlist and the name of your playlist. Or play songs by whatever. So you can do it that way. But the third way of doing it is simply a two-finger double tap. When you're playing music already, you can find the pause button or just double tap with two fingers and it pauses. Double tap again and it resumes the playback. If you're on the home screen and you haven't played anything yet, a two-finger double tap will shuffle the songs for you. And again, pause them with another two-finger double tap. The other place that the two-finger double tap works is in the phone, you know, if the phone rings, even if you're not in the phone app, but the phone rings, you can two-finger double tap to answer it rather than having to find the answer button. And to end the call, you can do a two-finger double tap rather than having to find the end call button. It's just a time saver. It works in the Voice Memos app to quickly start and stop the recording. It works in the camera app either to take a photo or to start and stop video recording, depending on which mode you have chosen at the time. So the two-finger double tap is a very nice one to know. Another one that's important to know, I don't really use it, although I can see a couple cases where you might, that is the three-fingered double tap, mutes and unmutes VoiceOver speech. And if you accidentally do this, you'll know now how to undo it. It's a three-fingered tap-tap. Why would you ever want this? Well, the most practical situation that I can think of, you might say during the listening of music, and that's probably true if there's really a case where it would matter to you that it, you know, I mean, it's not going to randomly start talking unless you'd get a text message or, you know, when the screen locks, you know, that sort of thing. But the bigger reason is because if you were on a phone call that used one of those, like, automated voice prompt systems, you know, you may want to mute that speech so that it doesn't confuse the automated system. But that's about the only other time for that. There are additional commands, and you can find them all in Apple's VoiceOver, well, in Apple's iPhone user guide. That web address it can be found at is apple.com/accessibility. Again, that's apple.com/accessibility, and you can go in there and you can actually get the entire user guide for the iPhone, and the last section is on universal access, and I actually suggest reading that section first, then go back and read the rest of the document. It'll just help you. That is all I have for you for right now. Remember, you can email me at mjvolbrecht@embarkmail.com. That's mjvolbrecht@embarkmail.com. We'll talk about Apple TV another time. Remind me if I forget, because it is a cool device, but I don't want to take up any more time today. This one was rather windy and rather long. They won't all be like that. Send your questions and comments to me. I'm going to answer them best I can in podcast number 2. Take care.